So, Philip, I was thinking that given how much effort we've put into growing beards, we probably should be honorary bearded men.
How much effort do you put into growing your beard, Matt?
I do at least 1 hour a day of beard calisthenics.
Is this a consecutive hour, or is this spread out through the day an hour's worth?
Oh, it's consecutive. If you don't do it consecutively, you just see no results.
You block off an hour of every day for beard growth.
It's important.
I've been doing it wrong. That's why mine doesn't come in fully, like around where my smile lines should be.
Oh, I
Like it
see.
doesn't connect to the mustache very well because I'm not working that problem area.
Because you only work on your beard intermittently, you have an intermittent beard.
That's so true.
Also, when you said smile lines, don't you have to have a smile?
Right. Frown lines is what I would have.
Nondescript emotion lines.
Grimace and or smirk lines.
So basically, you're going to look like 20-year-old version of yourself when you're 60 because you've never shown any real emotion.
That's right. Secret of youth, everybody. Be dead inside.
I am Philip.
I'm Matt.
First, we'll have a little chat.
Then put on our improv.
Now it's time for Next at Bats.
And we're here today with the Bearded Men. Hi, Bearded Men.
Hello.
Hello.
And
Hello.
we have all six of you in one room.
That's
This is
amazing.
a special occasion.
Tight squeeze.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honeymoon dream.
And a lot of beards.
Yep. Well, a lot on me.
An
yeah. We're all growing.
Yeah, I've been growing for a few days.
You're looking good.
Yeah, you can almost see it.
Put the mic if you can hear the stubble.
Oh,
attacking it.
You guys want to introduce yourselves real quick for any audience members that don't already know the Bearded Men?
Hey, I'm Tyler Michaels.
Hey, I'm MJ Marsh.
Joe Rapp.
Matthew Pittner.
Lucas Vanosik.
And Tyler Mills.
And as always, I am joined today by
Philip Simondet, and your host, as always,
is Matt McLeod. Thank you very much, Philip, and we'll see you in actually probably 22 minutes today.
That seems really long. Maybe 12.
Yeah.
Probably.
Maybe 12.
We have to rush this episode because they're leaving.
They're leaving, that's right, because they're going on their Beard by Beard West tour in just a couple of hours. How did this tour come about, real quick, guys? Tell us
forced.
About it.
It's a forced tour.
It's a forced tour.
In a way. Matthew is actually, he has decided to move to L.A. So as a way for him to get a cheap move and force us to help move him a really long distance, we decided to do a tour all the way out there.
Actually, I have a confession. I'm not actually moving. I just didn't think this tour would happen unless I lied to you.
You heard it here first, folks.
I had a feeling all along, actually.
And Matt, you're moving out there to start Beard West.
That's the hope and that's the dream.
That's excellent.
Not as successful as Bearded Men North or
right.
Minneapolis, you know.
Right.
But, you know, it'll still kind of have some sort of pull.
Well,
sure.
We might, you know, in Kansas City, one of us might just have to get dropped off and try and thrive there for a little while and survive in a community so we can have more franchises.
Sure.
We have to, whoever draws a straw.
Wait, is this the point of the tour that I wasn't sure of? We're all just getting dropped off in
I
different
think we
cities?
I think we just found out who's going to Kansas City.
It's Johnny Appleseed.
Exactly. That's our plan. Basically. One after another.
Dropped in the middle of nowhere with
for,
a suitcase.
For
yeah. I'm the fourth MJ, actually.
Yeah. For the Twin Cities Improv Festival, we're looking to have Bearded Men North and Bearded Men West have a head-to-head match.
Okay.
Because
yeah.
We have head-to-head matches at
it's a scrimmage.
One will play the heroes, one will play the villains.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
That could be awesome.
That would be awesome.
I like this.
So
let's write this down. Edit that part out so people don't know that you gave us
yeah,
that idea.
No.
Done. Done. Or now we are a part of your group.
Oh, all right. Well, you do have nice beards, both of you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I grew it out just for this podcast.
Today.
Today.
Years.
Yep. So I don't want to go into too much of the history of the group. I kind of want to more talk about, you know, what you guys do on stage. But you did form out of college or in college. I actually can't remember. And it was originally a 10-person group. Am I correct in that?
Yeah. Actually, Matt and I and one other guy, Josh, we met in college and we started the group. And actually, we originally were a cast of seven. And then 2 years into it, we cast three more people, one of those being Lucas.
And I'm here, so I'm then, here today.
Yeah.
I'm here today.
You made it.
And so then we were a group of 10 for a couple of years, and then Matt and I moved to Minneapolis, and then MJ joined up, and so did Tyler Mills. And Tyler Michaels was one of the original seven.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, don't forget, too, there was Michelle and Beyonce. And Kelly, but we decided to split off, do their own thing. Destiny's Child, bro.
Close enough.
Child. We're basically the Destiny's Child of improv. We have a different lineup every time.
Sure.
But Joe's dad is really wealthy and knows the music biz, so he's moving us in. And
not true at all.
Now people know that.
So the reason why I wanted to bring that up is because you were in North Dakota, correct?
Mm-hmm. Pretty darn close.
Yeah, right or Moorhead. Moorhead.
Yeah, it's a border. It's a college state. Fargo-Moorhead. Yeah.
Fargo-Moorhead. And what I found interesting about that part of the history of the group was that you guys really did, you were kind of were entrepreneurs with your group. You started creating your own shows. You found your own venues. Not kissing your ass, but you busted your asses to get people to come see you and eventually got paid for it in Fargo-Moorhead. I mean, am I correct in all of this?
Yes. Yeah. Which is, I agree, it's as astonishing as your voice makes it seem.
Yeah. before you came down to the Twin Cities, you were already getting hired out and not just playing venues and having people come pay to see you.
We'd go and do corporate events.
Right.
And we did, some workshops. I mean, all that's exponentially grown as we've gotten older, more mature. I mean, I think that helps too with business stuff, that you don't look like you're 18-year-old coming in and teaching these people. But that's all grown. And the motivating force behind us is that you make your own opportunities.
Sure.
So you just be resourceful. Like, when we were going to Huge, we actually submitted a show to Huge, and we didn't hear back right away. And I think they had a full lineup at the time. And we were just going out, was it west of Minneapolis?
Mm-hmm.
To a coffee shop out there and performing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're, it was not ideal. It's just in the middle of, lights are on, espresso machines running.
Had five people in the audience.
Yeah.
They didn't know that a show was going on when they came in. They were just looking for the Wi-Fi password.
I don't even think the coffee shop had a stage or anything. It was just in their open
area.
In front
of a fireplace, though. Yeah. Stayed warm.
Had a nice little mantle.
Yeah, so
it's true.
Our mentality is that even if, say for whatever history changes and Huge just didn't ever want us to give us a show, we would have just gone out and we would have been someplace else. Would we have been as successful? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
But Huge and us together, I really like that marriage. It's been awesome.
It's been a blessing.
We can't thank the theater enough.
Yeah. And you guys were also good to them with the bar, and they've been good back to you. So I think that it's a reciprocal relationship.
Huge beards. Huge beards.
Yeah, huge beards. That was a funny situation, too, because it came up where they just held a alcohol awareness training thing that they had paid someone to come in. And the five people who attended that meeting were Butch, Jill, Matt, Joe, and myself. And so when it came, I think Butch kind of clicked in his head at the end of it. It was just kind of like, hey, so you three already bartend, separately, or have experience with that, or at least beer and wine and whatnot. So why don't you guys just do this? You just do this and take care of it, and we'll call it the Bearded Bar, and boom. And we're just like, oh, hell yes. And just simply because I really do feel as if no one else just came to that training. I feel like that could have changed the entire landscape of what we are as a group, maybe, and what Huge was, and the Huge Bearded Bar as well.
That's a testament to how generous Huge is, too, because we didn't approach them and be like, hey, can we put our logo or call the Bearded Bar? I mean, Butch was always like, you do the work, but we'll name it that. And we would have done it anyways. I mean, we would have been behind the bar running it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Huge is super generous.
So going back to your time in Fargo, and then we'll start talking about what you guys do on stage. The point that I was saying, bringing that up, is a lot of groups talk about, how can I build an audience? You guys were thinking about your brand from the beginning, it sounds like. I mean, you were building your brand from the beginning. And, you were hustling for for corporate jobs. You were working to actually make money at this, and you guys were theater students, not marketing students.
Yeah.
So where did the impetus for all of this come from? Where was the drive for this?
Nobody really wanted to do it. Joe just has a business degree and forced it on us.
Oh, you do have a business degree.
That's my second degree that I don't talk about.
Okay.
It's like his bastard child.
Yeah.
One thing that we did up in Moorhead, I mean, Fargo-Moorhead, at least from my experience, really only dabbled in short form.
Okay.
Which is also where we started. We started out with short form, and, you know, we love to do it. And for at least a few years up there, and maybe some as we started like expand elsewhere, we titled ourselves an experimental improv troupe. So we were always trying different things, and this is more speaking about like the creative side than the marketing or like corporate side. But
that's my alarm.
Nice job, man.
I'm supposed to be at a
meeting. Gotta go. But we really just tried like weird stuff all the time. I mean, we did a few like comedy sports style shows when we were up in college. We did a few, like, we did a town council, which we kind of created ourselves.
Grannies.
We did Grannies. That's where Grannies started. Josh and I did like a superhero duo thing.
Oh yeah.
One time we did some solo improv stuff. Yeah, we just kind of tried everything. Mm-hmm. And saw what stuck and what people were interested in, and kind of kept going in those directions. So I think that led us to some success as well.
Totally. I think in terms of like our marketing for ourselves, I don't even think we knew what the hell we were doing. I still sometimes am like, what the hell are we doing? But I think we just decided to do weird stuff and thinking, well, at least this will get us some kind of attention, either good or bad. And most of the time it got us good attention. I mean, we spent lots of time, Matt and I spent a whole night painting like sandwich board signs that we could wear that just said like Bearded Men Improv Show tonight. And then we took fake beards from the costume shop at the college and put those on and wore the signs and just walked around campus handing out like little pieces of paper that just said the show name and the time. And I think people were like freaked out, but it was fun and goofy. And I think doing weird stuff like that just ended up making our group kind of what it is today. I think we still like, I agree that I feel like in some ways we're not quite as maybe as experimental as we used to be, but I think that's what like made us into who we are now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first few weeks of our first run at Huge, we did the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we're walking down like Lindale and Lake and Hennepin, wearing the poster boards and the bowler hats and the fake beards, and handing stuff out. And I remember just like I was like new to it, so I was overdoing it. Be like, here you go, it's a show tonight. It's right down here. It's only 3 blocks away. It's this and this. And then Michael's. You just walk up and just stand there and stare at somebody and like kind of do a stretch dance sort of thing and like hand them the ticket, and just they just had to take the ticket, and they just, you didn't say a word just to explain yourself, and they're just like, I will take this, just don't touch me. And they'd probably be the ones that showed up, because everyone I talked to, I remember their faces. I don't remember seeing anyone actually show up, but you hand out like 100 flyers, 3 people come see your show and you're like, oh man, you made it. And like, you are 3 favorite people now.
Yeah, and that's a success to us. Like that, I mean, it still kind of is when you're advertising and sending flyers out, and you got stuff posted all over Facebook nowadays and Twitter and whatever. You get 3 people to show up to your show, and it feels great still.
It's true. I mean, I think that is like the funny thing is I think so many people get caught up in being like, man, this fucking sucks. We only have 10 people here. I'm pissed. It's like, well, you still have 10 people there that want to watch you, and they're excited to be entertained. Like, they're not going to be there if they don't want to be entertained. Well,
especially if you don't recognize 3 of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, totally.
I'm tired of my mom being at all my shows.
That's the craziest thing for me, or just anyone that's just like, hey, great show. You're like, oh, thank you so much. Like, who do you know? They're like, oh, no, we're just out tonight. And you're like, who are you? Like, you're amazing. You're such a rare bird. I try to hide my excitement as to not scare them into coming back. They're like, yeah, that was cool, but like, do not talk to those guys after. Like, they will just touch your arms and be like, oh, stay. Like, it's very strange. But it's a blessing every single time.
Yeah.
I think I was also with some of the branding stuff, I think early on we didn't concentrate too hard on being like, this is what because we used to use like 3 or 4 different images before we kind of fell on that one bearded guy,
which were made in like paint
Yeah, they would pay. I mean, like over the years, I think someone just eventually like, hey, this is a vector image of yours, and it's all cleaned up and polished, and then we started using that. But up until that point, we all come from different talents. Like Tyler Mills, he does playwriting. So if we have anything that's like scripted or written, that's like at the beginning of our show, or like we've had a couple trailers that we made, Tyler will always look it over and polish that up. Or if there's like some singing stuff we sang before a show, and Michael's helped us polish that up. You know, we're all holding each other accountable to a certain sort of standard and being like, I can help us look better. And that came from the business side early on, and being like, how can we present ourselves in a way that people don't think we're just some schmucks, even though the main bearded men might, you know, might lead you to believe different things of what we actually look like. But then also, if once we show up, be like, oh, okay, are these kids kind of goofy or what? And yeah, we're just a good group of guys that hold each other accountable to be better and not just call each other out.
It's funny too about the idea of bearded men. Like, we will forever hear this joke or this bit of like, hey, you don't all have beards. You know, and someone always tries to call it out. And I never want to be upset with them, but I'm just like, if they knew the 200 other people that came before them in the last like 4 months, they wouldn't have said that. And it's always funny because it's an improv group. I get it, we're the bearded men, but it's like, you know, the mini apples. They're not tiny apples. They're four hilarious women. Like,
the Beatles weren't a bunch of bugs.
Right? God. So we're like the Beatles is what we're trying to get down to.
You know what's really funny about that is that no matter how many times you've heard that joke or that like just say, yo, you don't have any beards, we never come up with a good, solid joke in return, ever. It's just like, yeah, shape vine, it all fell off. And they're like, yeah.
That's why I was worried I was an affirmative action hire of some sort. As a logo, like, oh, this, we need a fucking guy that can actually grow a beard. It's like, sure, all right.
Maybe they're just at a comedy club and that's the best joke they can come up with.
Yeah, that's true too.
So now moving to what you guys do on stage, your tagline is Bearded Men Epic Adventures. When you're not doing a genre show. So is that something that you guys love? Or is it something that you found that you're good at? Or is it something that... that you found that audiences love, or is it just that you like to disappear into fantasy world and like to go as far into adventure land as possible?
I think the answer is yes to all of those questions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's a marriage of all those things in so many ways. I think we've gone away from the idea of just being a genre-based adventure, aside from actual genre-prepared shows. But it doesn't mean that we can't, you know, have an adventure in a mundane setting. I think that's maybe where at least I get the most excited. And I think that's where we all maybe are at. Not like, oh, we're so done with this whole like fantasy and like epic seas and dragons and stuff. But like, really, it's just more like, man, you can really find that same character, you know, hero's journey in this person that works as a bag boy, you know, and it's so fun to watch them grow and be challenged and be, you know, have to face hardships, for, whether that's a kid who gets a sword and has to climb a mountain versus a kid who just has to deal with getting paid like $7 an hour. You know, I don't know. I get more excited about that, I guess, finding the adventure that's, you know, happening all around already, or making it. That's maybe that's a sidestep we're taking, is we're making something that's relatively simple, but it means so much right now that it is epic and it is an adventure, even though it's not quite like you'd imagine it to see. Like, not every show is a flaming sword and a giant serpent or... you know, gorilla men, but some of them do, you know, for sure.
Well, they should.
Yeah, well, we try. That's how we keep those three people coming back.
But yeah, I mean, I was trying to get that flaming sword into the murder mystery did last night, but it just didn't fit. Yeah.
I think part of the reason that we do this kind of show is that, one, we've, like I said before, we kind of dabbled in a lot of stuff and kind of try to find what we love to do the most. But also, we all come from theater backgrounds.
Right.
And I think our show is extremely theatrical, whether that be in like the storytelling elements or just how much we commit to a character on stage, I think is something that we always hold true to. It's sort of like some of our mantras are like, you know, play honest, whatever world you're in. Even if you're at the top of the mountain with like a Greek god, you still have to play honest to whatever that world is and play truthful to it. And that's something that we've always just attached to.
And I think, honestly, I mean, we, at least speaking for this iteration of Bearded Men, we always, in the beginning when we started performing together, this particular group of people, we didn't set out necessarily to tell a beginning to end story, but we just literally kept doing it. It just, it just kept happening. Yeah. And so I think that more than anything was what set us on that course, because we just looked around and said, well, I guess this is what we're doing. You know, I mean, this must be what we want to do because we keep coming back to it. And I think that, I don't know, that, and that to me, the group right now as it is formed somewhat organically. I mean, obviously there were people, I went to high school with Matt, and obviously Matt and Joe moved here, but it really was kind of, we looked around and it was just sort of, these were the people that were here and we're still there kind of performing together. And it, in the same way that the storytelling was organic, I think even the formation of the group as it is right now was a very organic thing.
And I think that we, what you just said, telling like a story beginning to end, is something that ever since we came here to Huge, that every single one of our shows has done.
Tried.
From Apocalypse least, or
at least tried.
Our Christmas or our Dungeons and Dragons or our Pirates thing. It's always been beginning to end, which is kind of interesting to reveal that.
Yeah, I remember that now, thinking back on, like, we just do montages. We have a half an hour set. The last 15 minutes, we would just be, it would be a linear story all of a sudden. And then we get to the end of it and we're like, oh man, I wonder what happens with that guy, the mad scientist.
Yeah.
And we're like, I remember literally us looking around and being like, we need to learn to do this better. If this is what we're going to do, we need to learn how to do it better.
Hmm.
And then we're like, well, why not just take every Splendid Things workshop ever available from any of those teachers? And I think watching more of their shows and absorbing what they have to do, because it was really awesome to get inspired by doing something and then realizing that it not only had it been done, but it's been perfected in so many ways by certain people in their own style, that it's just all the information is there for you to learn and grow from. It's kind of that thing where, like, oh, I have this brand new idea that someone thought of 1,000 years ago, and I'm gonna try and get better at it.
That's still discovery.
Right. Yeah. That's the excitement in that, too.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've always liked. Like, we used to, way back early on, we used to meet at 12 o'clock at night. We meet at midnight because that's the only time anyone meets. So we'd meet in the theater, like green room, and we'd just get up and do stuff. And it felt like, because there's no one around to teach us, like, you know, I suppose Jill probably would have came down and taught us. I don't even know if we had enough money to pay her, but we felt like we were literally making, we were creating it as we were going along, even though everyone has already done this. But it was cool to, like, kind of find it on our own and, like, to read books and then try to apply it. And then you talk to people later on, like, oh, yeah, you do this, and this is actually already written in a book that, you know, like, so it's kind of cool to be on that. To be comfortable exploring and kind of figuring out for yourself.
And to get identified now, too, where someone points out what you did, and they're like, oh, you did this. You're like, we did?
Like, yeah, like awesome. The game, or, you know, like, the game. We didn't know any of these terms.
Yeah. I personally learned the idea of game and scene from Butch Roy teching our shows in the beginning. I was like, I've read all about it. I've seen it happen, like, from UCB and stuff, but I don't know really what it is. And then there was some set where I had a potato that glow in the dark, but I only had 9 potatoes, and they only glowed in the dark for like 10 seconds. So every fucking 10 seconds, he blacked us out until I scraped a potato and had it fresh again. I was like, oh, this is it. It's literally like God teaching you how the wind blows. So I was like, thank you, sir.
I think it's kind of like explains why we were so theatrical, because we didn't know what the hell we were doing, like, in the beginning. And like, we were all theater students, and we were like, yeah, we're really good at acting. Right, you know, so let's just act and, like, make it up. We'll make it up and act, because that's what improv is, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of what it feels like. I, you know, I don't think we said that out loud,
but that is
like that, but that's kind of what we did, you know.
And it's funny how many people still to this day are like, well, isn't it hard to do, like, just one story the whole way through? And it's like, well, I honestly, and, like, I think I have now flipped from what I used to think, because at first I was like, yeah, it is pretty hard to do that. And now I honestly, it's almost harder for me to not tell a full story when I improvise. Like, I have a hard time when I'm in other shows that aren't like that are more montage based.
Right.
For some reason, my brain is just like, well, how do these connect? And that's like, no, these need to be separate. So for, like, our show, I really like the fact that it's one story. To me, like, it makes way more sense in my brain. And I think for us,
going back to our theatrical background, I think that's why it works so well, because all of our brains, in a theatrical sense, that seems to make the connection easier, like, for us, is just telling a whole story.
Yeah, not just mentally, but emotionally too. I always feel so much more drawn into the stuff that I'm watching. And even with a montage, even with the best players, they'll do like a 3-minute scene and then they'll transition. They'll be like, "Oh wow, like I forgot that this was not the whole thing." But then I'm like, "But I really wish it was. I wish you could go back and I want to see those characters again, you know. And I want to, not just a return or a callback. I want to see them. Like I want to see this guy try to get on a plane. Like, I want to see this guy order food. I don't know. I get obsessive that way. I think we all do. We'll get, like, character wheel or hero's journey blue balls if we don't get to the end of a set. And that's a lot of time it's our fault if we get the blackout before the real climax, or the blackout before the, you know, the denouement at the end. We feel like we all feel it. We all get off stage and go, "Damn it. Like, we shouldn't have messed around for those, like, 4 minutes in that one scene, you know?" And,
well, we always want to make sure the audience gets off, though. That's why.
That's the cure. Oh, yeah.
That's like the secret motto, right?
I think just make sure the audience gets off. Yeah.
God. MJ, bearded men. You were talking about that, like, emotional journey too, and I think the word epic for us means more than just like high fantasy adventure. It more means like an opera or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah. High drama.
Like the emotional act, the emotional, like, arc of a story, or like how you can. You know, it's improv comedy. Like, you go to a theater for improv, and there should be like an equal sign after it that says comedy. You know, it's just sort of expected. But you know, I think us as a group, we want to like take them one step further than that, and like have an epic journey where you might be touched, or you might mm-hmm. cry, or you might be, you know, sit back in your chair a little disgusted at a character or something like that. And I think that's great.
I mean, even last night's a really good example. Yeah.
And honestly, like scripted theater is the reason why people like it, is because it is like, you know, it's supposed to portray real life to some extent, but on like a heightened level.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel. Yeah. Like, that's what epic means to me. Like, when I think of our shows, is it's we're telling a story just at a heightened level that is like, just, it makes it that much more interesting for us and for the audience to watch, you know?
It's hard to walk that line too. Like, we were talking about last night's show, Lucas, like, even on the sides of getting a little like, okay, you know, should we let this keep going on? Because the audience is feeling uncomfortable. I was feeling a little uncomfortable.
Clearly.
Yeah,
Lucas played a nasty, nasty serial killer last night. And
holding a woman captive.
Well, and perhaps the thing that I think was more affecting to the audience was Tyler playing the victim. And playing a multi-layered victim, and the interplay between the two. Because there was a relationship that was being built between the two that was really creepy.
Yeah.
And really sad.
You know, what's funny too is, well, I don't know if it's funny, but Jill Bernard today told me about that. She said, "Do you notice one of the, especially in the first, like, 10 minutes, the biggest laugh in the entire show almost was when we edited it out of that first scene?"
Yeah.
Matt, and it was not a funny edit. Matt just says, "We cut to the riverfront." Like, how many times is riverfront hilarious?
Yeah, but it was a necessary catharsis.
Everyone felt it, like, "Oh, thank God we're out of this scene," you know? And then I remember when, maybe just like after, like, you know, because whenever you go to a riverfront in a serial killer story, there's a dead body on shore. No one just goes to the riverfront like, "Thanks for meeting me here." So it was one of those situations where we go to the riverfront, and then all of a sudden, I remember we edited. There was no cut to as far as where we were going. Mm-hmm. And Tyler Michaels goes and sits down in the chair again, puts his hands down like he's tied again. And you could just feel the audience just shift in their chairs. Like, "I know right where we are. I don't want to be back here. I don't want this to happen. Is she still there? Is she still captive?" And that's the same, you know, if you think about that too, that's the same show where we managed to have a character with the name Mr. Farts.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and Farts
Hardware. And
McGumbo.
McGumbo.
And I think with Lucas and Tyler doing such an amazing job of anchoring that, the reality, and the horrible reality of what was going on, we were able to, you know, to have that, you know, that light and that levity going on with that kind of character, that stupid scenario, because they were earned in the sense that, I would say earned, like, "Yeah, we deserve this." I just mean, there's a lot of shows where we'll just have a Mr. Farts type person, but I don't know if we've deserved to have a Mr. Farts type person in the show.
Sometimes I think about it in the form of like a symphony, like in those notes that you really like hang and like draw out, and they're sometimes uncomfortable.
Right.
And I think a lot of times, myself included, you will break the tension sooner than you need to. And the audience is on that same that tightening. It's the going up on that roller coaster. But then when you let it go, that's all the much more fun, and you don't find it unless you really hold that note. So I mean, it's
like a roller coaster like reaching its apex.
I think
it's a testament to both you, to Lucas and Tyler, for that reason too,
yeah,
and to not go for the joke and just stick in this, stay in this horrible place.
Sure. I think for me, and I think I'd say this for the whole group too, that it's just so great when you can give the audience what they're expecting, like a comedy, but also give them an experience mm-hmm. that they weren't expecting, and to say, maybe to offer up the challenge that improv doesn't always have to be comedic.
Whoa.
Well, I mean, even right before our shows, a lot of times we'll toss out personal goals for ourselves during the show, and almost every time we do that, at least one person says that they want, like, they would like to have like a nice, like, real moment
grounded,
in like a real grounded, real moment that isn't just there just for the sake of like getting a hearty laugh out of the audience,
or even just as a plot device. Either mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like that's when the reality comes in for me as a performer, where I get to really be moved and like feel something, whether it's actual anger or whether it's actual pain. It's for me. I mean, once you get that kind of feeling, it's like you just want more. You know, you get off on it, you know, so to speak. But again, as long as the audience gets off, that's our motto.
That's
I would like to think. I mean, I guess I don't know for sure, but I would like to think that the audience is there. The contract is to laugh, mm-hmm. but then the bonus is that they want to feel something beyond that also.
Totally. I mean, how many people, I feel like you could ask this to a lot of improvisers, and I think most people would say that it's more rewarding to hear the audience
definitely.
Like, ah, or yeah. rather than like laughing. Like anytime the audience does any reaction other than laughing, I'm, except for booing. But other than that, it is like, that feels the most rewarding. Like
unless
I walk off stage feeling
a sociopathic
like
villain.
Exactly.
Right, yeah, I think that's even fun.
That's like the mark of investment like through the audience. Cause I think you can laugh and not be invested. I think that's probably like the easiest thing to do as an audience member is to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it, to go a step beyond that means, you know, they're with you on this journey and you're sort of telling the story together. I really believe that as like performer and audience, like working in tandem.
Oh yes.
You can make the argument by saying that if you do have them engaged, I mean, like you've had them engaged from the very first word, you know, like, and it's just a system of building blocks after that. Because, I mean, like, it has to have a foundation. And I was just actually having this conversation with Matthew, like, an hour ago about how laughter versus engagement is. And engagement is always more rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it scares sometimes people coming to want to come to something from a comedy point of view. It's going to be a funny.
Mm-hmm.
And if you tell them, you know, like, play the drama or whatever like that. And I think some people feel uncomfortable. Like, well, we got to be funny. We got to have some jokes in here. And I always tell myself that it's like, at the end of the show, if no one laughed at me, no one is ever going to be mad at me for going, God, he played that so truthfully. Or
right.
Manny was engaging to watch. He didn't make me laugh, but it kind of pisses me off. Like, no one's ever going to feel that way. They're just going to respect you for playing the part well.
Right.
Even, and you probably will play an excellent straight man to whatever zany stuff is happening.
Mm-hmm.
So if you approach it from the honesty point of view, you can't really lose.
They might be mystified as to why they enjoyed your performance, but they still will have enjoyed your performance.
True. I don't think Luke made a single joke last night. There was a single moment during the entire show where Luke made a single thing that could have been out of contrast to what his character was. It was terrifying. That's what it was. And that's where it's one of those things where with him doing that, I can be Mr. Farts. You know what I mean? Like when you have someone that's willing to do that, it gives us the freedom to come up from under or come up from above. And I think, like you said, it's strange because you say, like, the byproduct is they feel something, perhaps.
Yeah.
But I think for me and for us, if the more we committed to stuff, like, immediately we realized the funnier it was.
Right.
Someone will turn and say something honestly about being in love, you know, and being married for 40 years to this mm-hmm. person here as a woman and a strong frontier woman and all these things, and people are laughing. And you're like, why are you laughing? This woman's just explaining her credo. You know right. what I mean? Like, I just expositioned in front of you.
Because they need to.
They want to. And then that's what we realize is so much easier almost to just commit completely because then people laugh because of how serious we're taking it sometimes. Yeah. People literally get like, what are they doing? You know, and they'll laugh at that. And you're like, well, hell, I mean, because I'll sit there and try to think of something funny to say. I'll say it. You get like 7 laughs. And then all of a sudden, like, somebody will say something. I'll actually respond honestly, and the whole place like breaks out laughing. And I'm like, "What the hell? Like, damn it!"
There's many times where I ask myself, "I'm like, am I really fun? Like, am I funny at all, or am I just really bad at playing drama?"
Well,
don't answer that.
Yeah, and, I mean, there's of course the idea that, I mean, playing good drama, I mean, real life is funny. Yeah. So, I mean, if you portray it accurately, that's funny.
Yeah.
So, well, now is the time in the show where I throw the microphone over to Philip Simondet for a brand new segment that we call Philip's Corner. It's Philip's Corner!
Nice.
I don't know how to preface this because we're short on time, so I want you to answer quickly, but still awesomely.
You perfectly prefaced that.
No pressure. Like,
I think you nailed that shit.
So in case you don't know, this is the part of the show where I unmute my mic and I ask questions. Well, Matt apparently goes to the bathroom. He really is giving me carte blanche. What is that?
Oh, man.
I can do whatever I want.
White cart.
Thank you, Lucas.
Nailed it.
Clarity.
Thank you, racist.
So one at a time, I'm going to stare at you awkwardly and then think of a question to answer. Okay. To ask you. You're going to answer quickly, but still awesomely.
Okay.
Tyler.
Yes.
Which word do you think you've said the most this week?
The word is absolutely.
Why do you say absolutely so much?
Because my mom says it all the time.
Are you sure?
And I've noticed this recently about myself, that she says it a lot, and I say it a lot too, and I don't know how to... It makes me uncomfortable. Yeah. It's like one of those I'm turning into my mother kind of things.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, that was you might be.
Absolutely.
The bar is very high. We raised everyone. That was an awesome answer. Thank you.
Uh-oh.
MJ.
I'm just cannon fodder now. Yes, sir.
MJ. Cannon fodder. What? Have you ever been to like a reenactment or just like Fort Snelling or something?
I have not. And I will not. Because I don't believe those events actually happened. Where's the proof? Where's the proof? It's all just a bunch of letters and books.
Did you check the pudding?
What? Is the proof in the pudding? Because I don't like pudding, so I'm not going to eat your proof or your pudding. And this whole Civil War thing is silly. I think we should stop. The whole thing. I think it's still going on the more we remember it. If we forget our history, we won't have to deal with it again. It never happened.
It never repeats itself.
And no, why would it? It's gone now. Erase it.
It can't repeat itself if it never happened.
I mean, think of all the things we're not doing now because someone eradicated it from our history.
Mm. Amen, brother.
Same. Right?
Oh, tell
just
them.
Same.
Tell
them. I didn't mean to get so honest with you.
This is a political blog now.
But hey, you know what? Union forever.
Jeez. MJ. Your honesty was hilarious.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Joe. Have you ever worked a union job?
No. I haven't. Although, I... fun fact, I did... before I went to school for theater and... business. before I went to school for those things, I really wanted to go to school to basically just be a mechanic. I really wanted to work on cars really bad for a while. And then I decided to do theater instead, which is the obvious other choice.
Yeah.
So
Joe totally had like a ton of car magazines in college. Like I always knew it.
In high school, I had a ridiculous vehicle that I spent too much money doing weird
what
stuff.
What was that vehicle? So, tell us.
1995 Mitsubishi Galant.
Yeah,
it was pretty cool, guys.
It must be because I thought it was Gallant. I'm way off. Well, is there a U in the end?
No.
That's Gallant.
Matthew. I started with Matt, and then I ended up with Matthew. Sorry.
Made it more awkward.
Yeah. That's my full name. Don't apologize.
Matthew is your full name?
Yeah. Actually, when I went to church as a kid, there was this guy, and he had the same name as me, and I thought he was the coolest guy because he could wink both eyes, so I always like...
Is that called blinking?
Well, you separately, independently, and I thought he was the coolest guy, and he always used to go, "Hey, Matt," and he'd always fake like he sneezed, and I just...
did he wink at you? With both eyes.
Yeah, then he disappeared for a while. I'm not really sure what happened to him.
Too much winking.
I was kidding.
He
winked himself out of existence.
Yeah, that's where that mystery show, in the blink of an eye. Or whatever.
Does that answer the question you didn't ask?
Beautifully. Follow-up question, can you blink both eyes? Perfect.
How do you feel? By the way. How do you feel since I blinked at you?
Like greasy?
Yeah, okay.
Lucas.
Yeah.
Do you know how to properly maintain a bicycle?
I know how to lubricate the chain.
That's more than most people, right? Oh,
yeah.
You just wink both eyes at it.
One time, I was riding my bike down the street, and I was going so fast, and the wind was going through my hair, and I could feel it. I could feel it right now. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever had this, but when you're a kid, or maybe when you are the current age that you are right now, you stand up to go faster because you don't have all that weight on the bike. Yeah. Oh, hold on, I'm getting there. And then your foot slips, and then you lose control, and then you land on your face.
Is that why you look?
That's what happened. That's what happened to my face and my legs. And then here's what I'm getting to.
Moral of the story:
the chain. Yeah, okay. As I realized, was real rusty, and I'm telling you,
yeah,
real rusty.
This sounds disgusting.
Seriously,
Luke just likes talking into the microphone far too much.
He's slowly gotten closer every word that has come by. Wait, so the rusty chain is what prompted your foot to slip?
Jeez, yeah, I'm sorry.
I can about imagine what it sounds like.
I'm very aroused.
Ah, Tyler. So many things to choose from. Someone said aroused. Someone said rusty. What's the best color?
All right.
When I was a child, I was extremely fond of pink. I mean, like, extremely fond of pink. And I can remember, and this is a callback to the show that we just had, but I can remember vividly collecting Pogs, and the Pog container that I had was bright pink, and I was extremely proud of that. And so as far as I can tell, in my mind, at one point, pink was the greatest color.
I won't.
Wow. Did you have affinity for Pink the musician at all?
No. In fact, I was not until my girlfriend was just watching a video of her on the internet. She did something at the Grammys, and I wasn't even aware that she was still singing songs. But I had heard the song that she sang.
I don't know if you can call it singing, and I don't know if you can call them songs.
Sure.
But
well, yeah.
Have you seen, no, it's, seriously, though, her performances are, like, wild.
Yeah,
she's like a, she's sure. Definitely got trained, like, some circus stuff.
She has some really training, cool. All right.
She's got some circus training.
Mm-hmm.
Bearded lady.
Oh.
What? I don't know. How does he say
it?
Got him.
Firing all cylinders over here.
Well, we got to Bearded Lady, so thank you so much. That has been Philip's Corner.
Thank you, Philip.
Philip.
Thank you, Philip.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's too late.
Sorry, go.
Okay. Just about what we were talking about before with the artist thing. I think sometimes you go and you watch stuff and you try to replicate to the point so you can do something exactly like that.
Yeah.
I think that some of us, like not being in a community for a little bit and working on stuff, you have to figure it out on your own so you don't try to replicate stuff as much. And I think sometimes, whatever, you know, like Philip, you're doing comedy sports and stuff now, and it's like you watch stuff so much, and you're like, man, how can I do it exactly that way? But you're never going to be able to do it that way. You got to find what in yourself, how you do it, and what's true to you. And I think that's
something that you said that inspired me too, is even if you do it as good as they do it, you're doing that, which is something that this, you know, community might already have. They already do this so well. Why put them on that pedestal and try to put yourself there too?
You're doing what they do because you do what you do, and so they're watching you do what you do.
To
so
be,
that they can do what they do.
To be or not to be.
That sounds doo-doo. Like a lot of doo doo.
Yes,
zinger.
Doo doo. All
right, but yes, I understand.
I don't know why I felt like I needed to add it then.
Oh, you can add whatever. It's your podcast, Pittner.
Whoa, what? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This is Next Step Matt.
Wow, I like that.
Sorry. It sounds like a different show altogether.
Every week, he wants it to be Next Step Matt every single time. I'm like, no, not this one.
Hey, you're the one who invited me, buddy. All right, you guys ready to do some improv?
Yes.
Yeah.
10 minutes worth. Next Step
Matt! You see an old barn. The paint is stripped off for the most part. The wood is rotting.
The barn door is hanging open as if somebody just went in there in a hurry.
You can see two kids standing outside of the barn looking into the darkness.
The barn is like shifted, like the kind of the barns that you'd see on the side of the interstate that has been neglected for years.
It's dark, so very dark. The cicadas are curling up and uncurling and sounding so loud throughout the night as the blood red moon full near to the horizon.
And a number of dead cicadas are on the ground at the base of the barn.
You can hear someone baling hay inside the barn, and small particles of hay just kind of catching the breeze flowing outside.
All of a sudden, out of the whatever the fuck you call those doors at the top of the barns, they're
barn door.
An upper barn door. There's a this figure appears and then just falls out of the barn door like just a fucking ton of bricks.
The hell's that?
Pappy.
What is it, Mary? Mary, what is it?
I'm scared. Someone fell.
Me too. I told you this barn was haunted.
Kids, what the hell was that?
Pappy, I don't know. Someone fell from the barn.
The only one in here.
Well, what you gonna call that body laying in the floor then?
Come out and check this out.
Should I poke him with a stick?
Let me roll him over.
Pappy's got blood on his face.
Oh my God.
What?
It's Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers, the priest?
Mr. Rogers, the priest that I bought this barn from.
Oh, dear Lord in heaven.
He lived here?
He lived here.
What?
Years and years ago, before you were born.
How long ago did you buy it?
Bought it 16 years ago.
You think he's been living up there the whole time?
I don't know. Let me go up into the loft. You kids stay out here. Keep talking. Keep yourselves company.
We're scared.
Pappy, I love you.
Love you, kid.
Do you think he's dead or just plain dead?
I know. I check his pulse.
I ain't gonna touch him. You touch him.
No, I said I'd touch him.
Oh, okay.
You won't touch him?
No, I'm gonna hold the stick.
All right. He's cold.
He's probably dead. I wonder if we're gonna have to bury him tonight.
His heart ain't beating.
I wish Mom was alive.
Oh, oh God. Oh, no. No. No!
Pappy? Pappy!
Pappy fell out of the, he fell out of the chute as well.
See that Pappy has a compound fracture in his femur.
Ooh, Pappy.
It's just gruesome. It's just sticking out and like,
smells like almonds for some reason.
I'm gonna try and put it back in, okay, Pappy?
No.
The child fails at this task.
Charles,
Pappy, what happened?
Is somebody else up?
The two kids look up to the window and they see just glowing yellow eyes. We gotta run, Curtis.
Let's go. Here.
We cut to the next day at the local police station. We see two cops sitting and they're sitting talking on a phone. They keep looking over at the kids. Well, the two police officers walk over to the kids.
All right, you guys are up next. You ready to answer some questions?
Curtis, I don't like these men.
Neither do I, Mary.
Why don't you like us?
We see these two officers are twin brothers. One has a mustache, one does not.
Y'all look too similar.
Well, that's just
the way it's not natural.
That's just the way God made us, honey.
Mm-hmm.
My mama and Peppy said we all individuals.
Well, we individuals too, see?
And this report says that your pappy's dead.
Yeah, so how right was he about things after all?
Well, I don't know. He'd never said nothing about his own death.
Either right or wrong doesn't make it any difference.
You're right.
So tell us what happened. Fast. In your own words.
Well,
can we have some more hot chocolate first?
After.
Oh. All right.
Well, we was just sitting outside the barn like we do when Dad...
No, we wasn't sitting. We was standing.
Well, we was outside the barn regardless. And we was hearing something up in the loft of the barn as Daddy was shifting the hay around as he does at night.
He was bailing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He liked to do that at night in a hot summer day.
And were you aware of anyone else inside the barn aside from your pappy?
No, honest. We didn't see nobody.
We just heard something up there. We think it's haunted.
Well, ain't no such thing as ghosts, but I guess... Well, it's almost lunch time. I guess we could go to the barn, look at it for you.
Is there such things as demons? Is that why the priest was up there? Was he exorcising a demon from our barn?
That's a good thought.
Yep, maybe.
What's your name again?
I'm Claude and this is Todd.
Claude, Mr. Todd, do you guys believe in spirits? Good and evil spirits. My mama always told us about good and evil spirits, and they are always constantly at war in our world, and sometimes they can cross over into the human world.
Where's your mama at now, little boy?
She's dead. She died in a car accident. She didn't buckle her seatbelt. Daddy said it was her fault.
6 months ago.
Good Lord, it's been a tragic year for you two kids.
Seems it.
We're orphans now.
Looks like it says in this report... 6 months to the day.
Yeah, it is right. I've been counting.
Well, we could sit here and talk, or you could show us the barn.
We cut to the church in the town.
Now. Calm down, everybody.
Amen. Yeah.
What can I do you for?
Somebody, this is Father Smithson. I'm the new clergy.
Well, new clergy.
To replace Father James Rogers.
Yeah, who, it's apparently, Mr. Rogers to you.
Well, I'm just going off of my papers here.
Yeah, what happened to him anyways? What happened? What was the story?
What's this doing to Mr. Rogers?
Amen. Amen. Bring any of our wives or our children Lord here today because we want to make sure it's safe again.
According to my papers, he met an untimely death.
Well, that's what I heard. I heard some sort of witchcraft, some sort of murder.
Some sort of sorcery.
Yeah. Well, not about the time you got to town.
No, I heard it was aliens.
Yeah, ever since some Disney movies came around.
Townspeople, have no fear. There's still God in everybody's lives.
Yeah, who are
everybody's?
You?
Everybody's?
Everybody's lives, yes, of course. And I'm here to make sure that there is still a conduit for all of you.
Let's get down to brass tacks now, sir.
Sure.
We like donut holes here. We are not a whole donut church.
Okay.
We prefer the holes of the donuts.
I'm happy to oblige whatever your town's customs are. I just want to make sure that this is a holy town and
cinnamon
I carry on
sugar
that tradition.
We're so holy we only like the holes. We don't even bother with the rest of the donut. Them sinful.
Molasses and cranberry. You hear?
Also very concerned about this whole idea of witchcraft that I've heard about.
Yeah. Well, this is something I heard. Heard in the hospital, they said that their necks was contorted before they fell out of them windows.
Yeah, I heard they didn't have any teeth in their mouth
anymore.
Yeah,
I heard they been twisted up something first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard they been probed by aliens.
Bite marks on them.
My question is, are any of these rumors valid?
Well, you tell me.
I saw the body.
You saw the body?
Yeah. You saw the body?
Yeah.
How'd
yeah,
you look like? How'd you see the body?
I work at the morgue's office, and I had to go. You know, the coroner told me to go pick it up, and I just said, yep, I'll go pick it up. And I looked him in the eye. Sure is, twisted like a corkscrew, no teeth in it, whistling like Dixie.
Wait, it was whistling?
The corpse was whistling.
Was it?
Well, wind goes through the mouth without teeth, it whistles a bit.
Oh, that does smell like witchcraft.
Were you waving it around, Pete?
Well, I mean, I'm moving the body.
As this is going on, one of the there's Todd and Claude walk in and address the congregation.
I'm telling you, there's donut holes here, not the whole donut.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we have an announcement to make. Now, me and Todd here, we've been investigating things up around the barn.
Oh, is that right?
Good.
And we found
aliens.
Even worse than aliens. We found there was
Democrats?
Even worse than Democrats.
That ain't possible.
Officers, please let me know.
Yeah, I'm trying to. They keep asking me if it's worse than this and
tell
worse
us,
than
tell
this.
Tell us. Yeah, now, well, down the hole.
All right. There was literally a cross burned in the side of the barn, and it smelled of sulfur.
Lord Jesus, Savior Christ.
He will save yourself.
The most interesting thing is you'd think it'd be warm after all that charred wood.
It was cold, wasn't it?
Cold as a witch's touch.
Yeah, Father, it sounds like you had experience in something like this before.
Well, why do you think I was the one that was sent to this town?
Say, why is it you got that shotgun that looks like a cross on your back?
You weren't supposed to notice that, but...
It's pretty distinct.
I done heard about you in the papers from Mississippi.
Well,
you're the exerciser, aren't you?
Yeah, I heard they're adding an extra eye to the town just for honor of you.
Exerciser or an exorcist?
Well, it's one of them two.
I'm the exorcisist.
Oh, my Lord.
Got talents for both.
Makes the spirit sweat.
Gentlemen, I would be happy and obliged if I could accompany you to your destination.
Whoa, is that your own motorcycle there with the crosses emblazoned on the side there, Father?
Yes, it is. I try not to draw too much attention to myself, but I had to get here in a hurry.
That's pretty amazing. Is that, well, you got your headlights, just one big white cross that shines onto the street.
And yes, those are my followers out there, the ones with the crosses burned into their chests. That's them.
How come all them robes is leather?
Because they act as armor also.
Holy God.
Oh, my Lord.
Lord and Jesus, Savior Christ.
I'll be getting you done at holes then.
Cinnamon, please.
As this is happening, we cut to like a sort of foster home where the two kids are being held. And there's held by a very kind old woman. And she's telling them some bedtime stories.
What happened next?
Well, next there was a little cat
And a little cat came into the house, and that made both the kids real happy.
Both the kids are smiling really big, and there's a breath and like and tapping that starts to tap at the window.
Oh, what is that? Maybe a little cat trying to get in.
Yeah.
You think maybe it's a little cat outside?
Yeah, there might be. Why don't you go check?
Okay.
Curtis, you go outside. All right, I'm just going to stay here.
Well, can I just open the window?
Well, you could do that, but is it just, it's not as fun. Hello?
Ooh, it's deathly chilly out there.
It's windy out there.
Look over there, those, it's those beady eyes again.
Oh, Lord.
Now, kids, you better shut that window right
quick. We got to run. Curtis, we got to run again.
Run, shut the window.
Busts through the window, this figure, and it stands in the room with just this shadowy presence. It's, you see its yellow eyes, and then like a flowing black hair.
As if the shadow is melting off of its body.
Excuse me. This is my home now. Who are you?
Silence.
Your name's Silence? Well, Silence, I want you out of here right now.
No.
And shadow erupts from the creature's face and enters into the woman's mouth and down into her body.
Oh, my God.
She goes stiff.
It's in my spleen. Oh, it's in my...
And just falls over.
Quickly, up the stairs. It's hiding under the bed.
This door's locked. So is that one. Oh, my God. And only three doors left.
Let's go in the bathroom. Get in the bathtub. That's what we do for a tornado.
Okay.
As this is happening, the priest and his whole entourage happen upon this house. They've done a lot of detective work.
Along with the detectives.
Along with the detectives. They've done a lot of figuring while all this has been happening, and they've tracked the spirit, the demonic presence to this home.
Through the lens from what we're seeing, we see underneath the door like a light coming in. You see the shadow of three figures. We pan up from the doormat all the way up to the doorknob. It turns... opens and smoke comes in with the priest at the forefront and the two twin brothers on the sides.
We see the Vatican followers with the leather robes climbing up the side of the building saying things in broken Italian to each other.
Oh, it's not a problem, brothers. I believe that the owner of this establishment is dead. We can all enter safely.
That's
good news. Well,
sort of. They continue to do like a sweep of the house, and they kind of like split up. Two brothers
fan out,
and the priest goes deliberately straight up the stairs.
A burst of crows comes breaking out through a grandfather clock and absorbs one of them. And
shit.
What are we gonna do?
Oh, what we're always gonna do. We're gonna find the problem and extract it.
Oh, that's why I love
Dante! It appears we're dealing with a shade here.
What
do we do next, priest?
Second floor! Fan out! Contain him!
What out?
There he is. Light only. Crossbow's ready. I'll draw him out.
The exerciser takes a small candle and affixes a metal cross behind it and lights the candle, and it gleams this brilliant light.
Just emanates a piercing light down the hallway.
The shadowy figure is caught in light for mere seconds and runs into the bathroom.
We cut to inside the bathroom where it's dead silent. Nothing can be heard from outside. The two kids are standing inside the shower as they can see a figure start to move through the semi-transparent shower curtain.
They're holding each other.
If anything happens to me, I want you to know I love you.
I love you
You gotta be quiet, Curtis. What's that?
I don't know. Should we start to say? Should we say a prayer?
Yeah, which one?
Probably Saint Michael.
Okay.
Saint Michael, the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our safeguard against wickedness and snares of the devil. God rebuke him. We all pray.
The curtain is ripped open.
And just then the priest breaks through the door down. Light floods the room and the shade explodes.
Oh my god.
And a small lump of coal hits the ground.
Looks like we eradicated it.
Yep, our work here's done, Todd.
Spirit of Sancti, Maracate.
The two cops start to walk and leave the bathroom, and the priest stands.
Hey, I need to replace one of my exorcismists.
Mr. Priest Man?
Yes, son. Daughter.
I'm a girl, but that's all good.
Sorry, I'd try to respect people's privacy.
I'm a tomboy.
Still very dark in this room.
I tell you what, I'll be one of your followers.
And me too. We're twins.
As they grab hands.
You were making fun of us for that earlier.
Yeah, we don't take mustaches anyway. Be along your way, cops.
Claude and Todd walk down the hallway, both begrudgingly mumbling to each other, as we notice they both now have a mustache. One of them, the shadow of a mustache.
This has been a Bearded Men production.
Nailed it. As long as the audience gets off. Next up,
and that's our show. Thank you so much to the Bearded Men for coming on our show. Thank you very much to Matthew Pittner. Farewell to Matt, moving out west to start Beards West, perhaps, who knows. Joe Rapp, Tyler Michaels, Tyler Mills, MJ Marsh, and Lucas Vanasek, which I've been pronouncing it wrong this whole time. I thought it was Vanasek. If you want to learn more about what the Bearded Men are up to, go to beardedmenimprov.com. Don't make the mistake of going to beardedmen.com.
Do not go to beardedmen.com.
If you would like to just find out what happens when you go to beardedmen.com, although you can probably guess, don't do it at work.
Beardedmenimprov.com.
Beardedmenimprov.com will get you to see these fine gentlemen that were on our podcast today. In a couple of weeks, the Bearded Men will be back off their Beard by Beard West tour, sans Mr. Pittner, who will be in Los Angeles. And they will be starting back up their normal 10:30 p.m. run at Huge Theater. That's Huge Theater, 31st and Lindale in Uptown Minneapolis. They will be starting a brand new genre show, which is Top Secret. They've been working on it for a while, and they are very excited about breaking it out to the public. Learn more about what's going on at Huge Theater by going to hugetheater.com.
You can see me perform with my brave new workshop house team, the Houlihans, this Friday, that's February 14th, as well as next Friday, the 21st, and then some more dates in March at the Brave New Workshop Student Union, 26th and Hennepin. The stage match is at 8. The house team and the coaches set is at 9:30. All of that for $5. What? And Matt coaches and performs over there often too. Are you going to be there soon?
I am. I'm not going to be there on the 14th, but I am going to be there on the 21st. And I will be coaching there soon too. I also have a show going with Drew Kirsten right now over at Huge Theater, and that's on Huge Wednesdays. That's at 8 p.m. at Huge, and that's going through February this week, although this is going up on
today.
Yeah, exactly. But this week we're going to be playing, we're going to be inviting Jill Bernard and Eric Heiberg to step on stage with us.
Oh, nice.
And then next week we'll get back to our normal duo format.
As always, you can go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Philip Simondet, which, side note, the people at work discovered that last night. So,
Oh, God.
So they all had comments for me today.
That's
fun. Go find out what they're talking about.
Yeah.
At youtube.com slash Philip Simondet.
Well, you do have songs such as Game of Thrones will make her horny.
Mm-hmm.
And
I want to necrophilia you up.
But you also have a lot of other cool stuff and very genuine songs, as well as your weird
right. songs. They like the song You're Not Special.
Oh yeah, that's a good song. And to hear a particularly good version of You're Not Special, listen to the Misery Street episode of Next at Bat. We recorded
right.
it live in studio. It was a lot of fun. Actually, really live in apartment, but whatever. But as always, go check us out on iTunes. Subscribe to our podcast, and you can hear all of the things that we've ever said to anybody.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Then rate and review so we can find out what you think about us. And give us 5 stars. It helps us out a lot. Gets some new people to listen to us. Tune in next week when we're going to have the kids table on our show, which is really fun. It was a really fun recording. It was a little crazy.
Very crazy.
But it was a real fun time. And they're a real, real funny group. But until then, as always, praise
Jai Bosh.